There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Welcome in. Hour number two of Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig, sitting in for the man, Sean Sullivan. You know, I signed off on his vacation. I let him have a couple days off. He needed the rest. No FCC rules breaking here, at least to this point. So Sean will be back later this week. And that's a good thing, too, because we've got a busy week on the road here at Midday Mobile. Tomorrow we'll be live at noon from the fantail of the USS Alabama at Battleship Memorial Park. That'll be from 12 to 1 with Midday Mobile, and then from 1 until 2, well, the Marines are taking over. Scuttlebutt Network, Tom Claxton, and Cal Walters, they'll take the mic then. That is, unless they force it from me before they get on the air. And then Friday, Midday Mobile Live, noon to 2 at your CBD store of West Mobile on Hillcrest Road near Greelot. You'll find it across from the Waffle House. They've got a pretty big Christmas open house going on Friday, and the store owner, Joe Brown, giving away a CBD SunMed Relief Bundle valued at over $240. That'll be on Friday, Midday Mobile, noon to 2. And then unrelated to Midday Mobile, but I guess related in a way, on Thursday night from 5 to 7, it's an annual event that they have at Fairhope Brewing Company. Really cool thing they do called the Bartenders of Christmas, where they have guest bartenders come in, charity bartenders, and I hope you come by. Let us pour you a drink. The tips and donations go to Wilmer Hall Children's Home. It's the sixth year they've done that out there at Fairhope Brewing Company. So come out, let myself or Sean or Kelly pour you a drink, and then give to charity. I mean, what's better than that? Rolling on with Midday Mobile, and it's a pleasure to invite my next guest onto the show, a man I've known for a while now, actually from my home county of Clark County, Jeff Motes, author of the Once Upon an Apocalypse trilogy. You got three books now, and it was just 3 years ago you had started with the one book. So thanks for coming on today, Jeff.
Well, thank you, Dalton, for having me here. It's a pleasure.
No problem. And it's Giving Tuesday, and of course, you know, we're past Thanksgiving now. We had Black Friday, Cyber Monday. But this is the time of year where people are looking for, you know, rare or interesting, maybe rare is the wrong word to use in this case, but interesting little different ideas to get family and friends as gifts for the holidays. And I can think of a lot of people out there that would be really interested in this trilogy you've written here. Where can people get the books right now?
Well, right now the books are available on Amazon and Kindle, paperback, and audio. But any brick and mortar store mm-hmm. can order them for you. I know a lot of people have gotten them from Books A Million here in town. Mm-hmm. They had them ordered in. There's a few stores that stock them, but they're not in this area. They're kind of niche stores in different parts of the country. But
yeah, I know a lot of people, busy people, prefer the audiobooks too, and you got all three on audio. So I'm going to start hammering that out. I started reading the first book. I'm going to hammer out the audiobook here over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, the audio is really good. I got a man and a woman that do the performance as a team.
Okay.
You know, as characters. And I mentioned it's available on Amazon, but it's also available at Audible and iTunes.
Great. That's great news. So how would you describe these books? Like, if this were a movie, you have the movie description on Netflix, what's kind of the overarching theme of Once Upon an Apocalypse? And there's a kind of a hint there in the title of the trilogy.
Yeah, I would call it a book of survival, but it's really about mindset and being prepared or not being prepared. And that's what the story does, is to try to give the reader some ideas, some thought-provoking experiences to to evaluate their own lives, mm-hmm. as to what they might would do in some unusual and very difficult situations.
And so this is set in Alabama, is that right?
Yes, it is. It actually, the first book starts off near the Birmingham area.
Okay.
And then the characters, there's three characters with three different mindsets and three different levels of preparedness that are trying to get home to Clark County after an EMP event. So the cars aren't working at this time,
uh-huh.
in the story. So it's an interesting story, and I've got a lot of thought-provoking scenarios in there. It's gonna make you think.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those possible scenarios, maybe not necessarily what you've written in the book, although I'm sure you covered the bases there. But you mentioned they're trying to make it home to Clark County, which is fitting. That's where you're from. That's where I was raised, Clark County. I went to school with your boys, TJ, Tyler, and Zach was much younger than me, but TJ and Tyler, I spent some time around back in school. But back then, you weren't an author. You were a working man, and still a working man, but how did you begin writing these books?
Yeah, that's really an interesting story in itself. I'm a electrical engineer and a master electrician by training and an author by accident.
Okay.
And I've been studying preparedness for probably about 40 years, and I was on Facebook talking to some friends just about difficult situations, and I just threw out a question, EMP, anybody got a clue?
Right.
And the responses I got back really showed me that most people didn't mm-hmm. understand what it was. And I thought, wow, I've been studying this so long, maybe I ought to try to help them along the way. So I started telling a little short story, just trying to create some characters that would, you know, make them think. And that's how I got started. Actually, I wrote the entire first book on Facebook.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a daily post. I wrote a daily post, and that's where it stemmed from. In fact, if it hadn't been for Facebook, I probably wouldn't have wrote it.
Well, that's as good a way as any to get started writing, and now look where you are. You got the full trilogy out there. You said you got started when you were kind of talking with some friends. What would you do if this happened, or what would you do if that happened? You can count me in that list of, you know, if an EMP hit today. And I know especially a lot of people around the FM Talk 106.5 studios and a lot of our listeners, they'd be like, Dalton, man, get with the program. You never know what could happen. Even my grandfather, he puts a lot of thought into this kind of thing. And it's something I've always been interested in, but I've never gotten off my butt to do something about it just in case worst case scenario happens. So I think it's really interesting that you said you've got in the first book three different characters, three different walks of life. I know you got at least one female character in there, and then three different levels of preparedness. So in these books, you look at this EMP attack or this EMP attack, and one of them doesn't know how to fire a weapon, and then you got the other one who's maybe military trained. Or how did you go about putting these characters in these positions?
Well, I've had a lot of questions about, hey, you know, what are you doing? What should you do? And I don't really like to tell people what to do
mm-hmm.
in case I'm doing something wrong. And I don't like to tell people what I'm doing. But I create these characters to give people, the readers, an experience of trying to understand the different levels of being prepared. And so what I've got is three different characters, three different mindsets, three different levels of preparedness, and I just walk you through scenarios with these characters. Actually, some of them, they don't start out together in the story, but some of them kind of connect as the story goes on. And it's trying to create this scenario that's going to make you think.
Right.
Now, an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, for those that might not know what that means.
Yeah, explain that.
Is a high-altitude nuclear explosion. And if you got an interest in that, you probably want to do some research on it on the Internet just to give you a good idea. I'm not an expert in that area. I've read a lot of experts in that area, and many experts disagree.
Of course.
On the severity of such an event. I chose to take my story down a certain path. And whether it happens exactly that way, I couldn't tell you. But the whole idea is to give you a thought-provoking experience to make you think.
And I really, you know, with everything that's going on in the world today, I mean, we talk China a lot, we talk Russia a lot. There's some people that say being prepared is fear-mongering. I don't look at it that way at all. And I'm not someone who's studied preparedness as thoroughly as you have, but I am someone who thinks that if you got a family, if you got
your own stuff you need to protect. You better be ready, not just if this specific scenario happens, but who knows what could happen. And this, you've been studying preparedness for a long time.
Well, I have. I haven't really been studying EMP as long as I have preparedness in general. But I believe there's three aspects to being prepared. There's spiritual, mental, and physical, and that's in all phases of your life. So as you prepare, you're just preparing your life so that when difficult times come, things won't be so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole idea behind being prepared. You know, the term prepper gets thrown out there, and sometimes it has a negative connotation, but the my thought process is just, you know, prepare yourself for difficult times, because difficult times are going to come.
Yeah, and I really, and we'll come back after the break and we'll talk more, but only after I ask this question, Jeff. I like this at the very beginning of The Journey Home, the first book you wrote. The very first paragraph you have there, this is not a book on religion or religious ideology. However, two of the main characters are Christian. They pray often and acknowledge God's influence upon the events taking place. If you find praying, acknowledging God, or seeing Jesus' name used in a positive context offensive, I suggest you don't read this book. These are strong characters who I think many can relate to. I hope you enjoy the book. And I guess you kind of just explained it, but what went into your decision to keep a religious theme throughout the series?
Well, my walk with Jesus is very important to me in my daily life. So, you know, it just went over into my writing. It's not just a Sunday thing. It's kind of a relationship thing.
Right.
And I create these characters to kind of emulate people that I knew, some of myself, some of others. And I just couldn't see going through a difficult time and not including that. And it's, like I said, it's not a religious Bible study. You're not going to find anything like that in there. But the faith of the characters, mm-hmm, does impact how they react to the events happening around them and how they interact with each other.
Very cool. Coming back, I want to take some questions. If you have any, get on the text line, the phone line, because Jeff, very well versed in being prepared for whatever scenario might come up. You might have a good question that he can answer for you, and we'll talk more about these books. Again, they'd make a great gift in someone's stocking or under the Christmas tree. Once Upon an Apocalypse, Jeff Motes, the three books, The Journey Home, The Search, Gathering Home. You can find them on Amazon. Really, all you got to do is search either Jeff Motes or Once Upon an Apocalypse. Yeah. And that'll show up for you. A great Christmas gift, and you can check it out online. Coming back, more Midday Mobile on the way. This is Dalton Norwig subbing in for Sean Sullivan.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Dalton Orwig sitting in for Sean Sullivan. Hear me on Mobile Mornings 6 to 9 every morning, usually with Sean and with Kelly Finley. At least the next couple days, it's just me and Kelly. Sean will be back here later in the week, and we'll be on the road tomorrow live from the USS Alabama at Battleship Memorial Park, and then on Friday at your CBD store of West Mobile. So come out and see us. Get some FM Talk 106.5 huggers, some of the floating keychains, which... I'm not sure, would that fit in for a doomsday scenario? You got to have a floating keychain, right, Jeff? Talking with Jeff Motes, author of Once Upon an Apocalypse. I mean, maybe you wouldn't need keys anymore, though.
You might for your boat.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
You might for your boat.
That would be important. This trilogy you've written, Once Upon an Apocalypse, you got The Journey Home is book one, The Search, book two, and Gathering Home, book three. And I love, it's interesting, it's not written like your average book. You've got different characters, and in these books, the characters are from different walks of life, as you said earlier, different levels of preparedness, and we're talking preparedness because in the book, an EMP strike occurs, and it knocks out the technology. I'm sure it causes just a host of problems, but talk a little bit about the characters and their levels of preparedness. Like, who are we seeing this book through the eyes of?
Well, the first book, I wrote the entire series from a first-person point of view from each chapter's main character. So when you read a chapter and you see the character's name at the top, that's the point of view that you're getting. The first book is following three different adults.
Okay.
Two men and a woman. And they each have different levels of preparedness and different mindsets, and they're traveling home through a very traumatic, after a very traumatic event, and they encounter some pretty
unusual situations, and they have to work through them. The second book is mostly about their kids at home while they're trying to get home.
Okay.
And the third book continues the kids' story and then ties it all back together.
Great.
So the kids are a 15-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy, and it goes through their struggles and their different mindsets.
So a coming-of-age story for them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, actually, that's actually exactly what it is. In fact, the girl is, you know, there's a lot of internal dialogue, and she keeps saying to herself, am I going to be a girl or am I going to be a woman?
Mm.
And because she's having to struggle through some very difficult times. Trying to get across the county, which today is, you know, in Clark County, you could drive anywhere in 20 minutes.
Right.
But if you're 30 miles from home and you have no way of getting there other than walking, it becomes a pretty big event.
Right.
And so she's stranded about 20 miles from home. And in the second book, the boy is actually trying to find her, and he's mm-hmm. having a hard time finding her because he doesn't even know where she's at.
So that's something a lot of teenagers haven't put a lot of thought into.
Well, I don't think anybody puts a lot of thought into it, really. I mean, how common is it for many people to hop in their car, drive 50 miles with nothing but a pair of flip-flops and maybe a bottle of water in the car?
Right.
And, you know, what if something happens that you can't get back home? So now, all of a sudden, you don't even have shoes to walk home in.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think back on, I can't remember what we called it, the little ice storm up in Birmingham a couple of years ago.
Right, yeah.
You know, people got stranded on the interstate for, you know, 24 hours or so.
Ended up sleeping in their cars overnight, freezing.
In their cars. A lot of them didn't have flashlights, didn't have blankets, didn't have water, didn't have anything. But they were stuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them a long way from home. So the whole concept behind the story is to get you to think, to put you in some thought-provoking situations, and make you think about what you should do, or maybe you would do something different.
I love it, and this is a good book for teenagers to read as well. Maybe if a parent wants their kid to give a little bit more thought to it, it'd be a good Christmas present.
Yeah, I think so. There's a number of schools in the Monroe County and Clark County that actually use this as a reader in the sixth grade.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so the language is pretty clean. There's one word that the main character in the first book uses as he's under a lot of stress, but it's a pretty clean read. And you're not going to see all this really gory stuff that you read in some books, because my mom read this as I was writing it, okay?
She was your editor.
I still remember the taste of soap.
That's awesome. Well, in these last couple minutes, so we've laid out the reasons to get the book, and I need to read it because I'm a guy who unfortunately would be woefully unprepared if something like this went down, other than the things that I already own. So I had a couple general preparedness questions for you. First, I wanted to know, everybody owns different things, you know, but what do you think the best things are that someone should have in their possession right now just to be prepared? What are, if you had to list three things that you should have just in case something happens, maybe in your car or at your house, what would you say those three things would be?
The most important three things. In the book is I have an axiom of threes.
Okay.
And axiom threes go like this. You can survive 3 weeks without food, 3 days without water, 3 hours without shelter, 3 minutes without air, 3 seconds without a defensive weapon.
Wow.
Okay. And it's not unique to me. If you go into survival forums, you'll see that in some form. So the very most important thing is be able to defend yourself. Because when that situation comes around, you only have seconds to respond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you need to have some form of shelter, which is your clothes or your vehicle or whatever, blankets or whatever. And then, you know, we're looking at water. Now, I left the air out, but, you know, in our area, unless you're close to a chemical plant, you know, you don't really have to worry about that. But if you're close to a chemical plant, it's something to think about. You might want some kind of respirator in your vehicle.
Smart.
Yeah.
So, and one question that I've thought about a lot, you know, the food that they always, that they tell you to buy just to be ready, and we've got about a minute left here, but the food that lasts for years and years, that dry food, do you think, is it smart for someone to have some of that on hand, or is that kind of a waste of time?
Well, it's not a waste of time. It's actually, you know, a really good idea. But you don't have to spend a lot of money to do it. You can go to Sam Club and
buy some rice and beans. They're dry. They'll last, if you store them properly, they'll last 20 years. So it doesn't cost a lot to be prepared. It just, it takes a mindset. You got to think about it because it's just not going to happen on its own.
Right. Very cool. Well, Once Upon an Apocalypse, Jeff Motes. Pick up the trilogy now. Amazon, you get the audiobook through Audible or iTunes. Just really search for it online. You'll find it. And I appreciate you coming in today, Jeff.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And I'm looking forward to reading the entire trilogy. And next time we talk, I promise I'll be much more prepared in case an event like this goes down.
Well, very good.
Coming back, we'll talk with Dale Leash from Lanyap. We're talking the future of Hank Aaron Stadium. City Council pushes off the vote for the lease agreement one more week. We'll get the full information update from Dale Leash when we come back. Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Dalton Orwig sitting in for Sean Sullivan today. He'll be back later this week. Check us out online, fmtalk1065.com. You can stream the station there. Also stream us on TuneIn Radio. Just open up the TuneIn Radio app, search FM Talk 106.5, and don't even need an FM radio in front of you. You can be hearing us live as it happens, and of course catch the podcasts after the fact. I want to talk to Dale Leash here, and thank you, Dale, for coming on with us. Of course, Dale writes for Lanyap. You can catch him. I feel like you write about at least a good 25-30% of the articles every week, and it's always outstanding information, Dale, so thanks for coming on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And the big discussion this week, we've talked about it some on Mobile Mornings, but Hank Aaron Stadium and what will become of the former home of the Mobile Bay Bears. Of course, they've now run off and become the Rocket City Trash Pandas. And
That's right.
It looked like City Council would vote today on the future of the stadium, but it was placed on hold for at least another week. Do you know what caused the delay for another week today?
Well, so yesterday they heard from two different proposals, which are both good proposals. One would bring pro baseball, and one would bring, you know, other sporting events and tournaments and stuff to the Hank. But specifically, there were some changes made to the contract of one of the groups that they were voting on, that they were supposed to vote on today. So they held it over for a week to let their attorney look at the changes.
Okay. And these two groups that you're talking about, one's kind of been in play for, I'm not sure how long, the Mobile Entertainment Sports Group, which you got some former Bay Bears staff on there. And how long has their proposal been out there? Because I know their plan's a little different. They're planning on keeping some college and high school tournament and games on and some events like live music. How long have they had their proposal out there?
Publicly, maybe a month.
Okay.
Apparently, they've been working with the city for a little bit longer than that, but for about a month or so, they've been coming to council meetings and trying to get this deal done. And you're right, they would, you know, they would take on the maintenance costs and pay rent quarterly, like the Bay Bears were paying $100,000 a year. And they, in addition to college and high school baseball, and I think Murphy has agreed to play baseball there.
Oh.
Use it as their home stadium, according to this group, if this deal goes through. So you've got a lot of, there's a lot of good parts of that plan that I think people are excited about. The other group is Tim Bennett, the co-owner of the Biloxi Shuckers, is interested in bringing an Atlantic League team to Mobile by the start of the 2021 season, and they would play their home games at Hank Aaron Stadium. So those are the two proposals. They would take on less of the maintenance and stuff like that. So I think from a city administration standpoint, they're kind of looking at the Mobile Sports Entertainment Group, and I think some members of the council are looking more towards the Tim Bennett group, so we'll see what happens.
So the first group you mentioned, Mobile Entertainment Sports Group, it looks like there, would they take the lease over right away? And then you mentioned the other group, Tim Bennett and KSJ.
Right.
They wouldn't take it over until 2021, so quite a difference there as far as when they would start paying up.
That's right, and it's, and I mean, yeah, so So the Mobile Sports Entertainment Group has a deal in place to take over, just waiting on city council approval, to take over the Ballcor lease of Hank Aaron Stadium, which runs out in 2022. So that they would just basically take over the lease and operate everything like that. Whereas the Bennett Group would stay the same for the next year. And then at the start of 2021, they would have the city end its lease with Ballcor, and then they would sign a new lease with the city. There are some issues legally with that, pertaining to whether or not there'd be damages involved, or if the city were to get out of that lease, would they be able to collect damages from Ballcor, who left early, would a Atlantic League team satisfy the land lease agreement that requires a double A baseball team, pro baseball team or higher, to play in that stadium? So there's a lot at stake here, and it's a little unclear really how the Tim Bennett Group would impact that.
And I want to talk about the difference in Atlantic League and Double A baseball, which we've had here for a long time now. But right now, is Ballcor still paying on the lease?
As far as the city says that they are. So that's if you take the city's what the city says as truth, then yes, they still are. And I guess they plan to for the next 2 years, unless this deal with the Mobile Sports Group goes through.
So the part of the contract you mentioned there, I think what it read that there had to be a double A team or its equivalent. And when you look at Tim Bennett's plan, Atlantic League, it's not quite to the level of exactly minor league baseball. The way I'm kind of seeing the Atlantic League, it's like an offshoot. They're affiliated in a way with Major League Baseball, but kind of the test case where they try all their different new rules before it makes it into the minor leagues. Do you think that having that Atlantic team would satisfy that part of the contract?
I don't know. They'd have to. The Little family, Joe Little III and his family own that, or have say over that land lease. So it would depend on whether or not they would get on board with the plan. They are at least verbally on board with the Mobile Sports Group's plan. However, they've declined apparently written support for that plan. But it would all come down to whether or not they feel like that satisfies the agreement or not. On its face, if you were to probably take it to court, I would say it probably doesn't. But I'm not a lawyer, so it would depend on what lawyers and judges and all that think about it.
So, if by chance neither of these two proposals are accepted by the council, and this would require a supermajority, and we've seen a lot of talk about supermajority lately, so who knows how the council would come together on that. But if neither of these proposals are accepted, what's it looking like? What would the other options be?
As far as I know, there are no other options right now. So we basically run out the clock on 2 years, and the land lease agreement would come into effect, that you could see theoretically the stadium come down if nothing is done in 2 years.
Wow, that would be that'd be really weird to be in Mobile without a Hank Aaron Stadium.
Absolutely.
Speaking of the namesake, what's Hank Aaron's role in all this?
Well, that's a little confusing, a little up in the air as well. We have members of the media have seen letters, one from Hank Aaron and one from his attorney, that support both plans. So it's kind of up in the air on which plan he wholeheartedly supports. And I mean, it may be the situation where he, supports both as long as the stadium doesn't get demolished. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of been a question as well. And then there's also this, Councilman Fred Richardson seems real concerned with Hank Aaron's legacy. And you get that because he's, a baseball Hall of Famer. He grew up here. Stadium's named after him. He's got his house, his old childhood home is right there on site. It would be a shame to see it torn down.
So what would happen with his childhood home? Has there been any talk about that? If they ended up not going with these proposals and the people that own the company or that own the land there end up demolishing the stadium, what do we do with his house?
I've talked to the city about that, and they have said that they would move the house.
Okay.
Somewhere else, and it would hopefully remain a museum. But you've got another issue that once the Bay Bears left, the Hall of Fame took back all of the stuff that was in the house, and so Hank Aaron and his lawyer are trying to work with the Hall of Fame to get some of that stuff back in the museum. So that's a whole other issue.
And we've had some listeners with some of their own ideas, some good ideas too, about what should be done to help make that part of the area successful, and
right.
one person had a really interesting take. You know, we've had so many great athletes come from this area, maybe putting some sort of museum to Mobile athletes like Satchel Paige and Hank Aaron and Jake Peavy and so many of the football players. Have they taken any public opinion, or will there be time for the public to get up there and speak on this at all before they do this vote?
I mean, the public could speak next week, because it'll be an agenda item, but no, they don't have any, they don't have any public hearings set or anything like that, but, anybody in the public can speak on any agenda item the day of the vote. And I haven't heard anything about any other plans moving forward with any museums or anything.
Mm-hmm.
A museum might be hard to swallow for Mobilians now.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So what other topics? I know this has been, seems to be the biggest topic currently. Of course, we've been talking about city council a lot over the last few years, but what else have they been taking up? Anything interesting they've been talking about in those Tuesday meetings?
Sure. I've got a story coming out tomorrow, so check it out, on affordable housing and whether, and the shortage that we have here in Mobile. And the city council has taken it upon themselves to form a commission of, and they want to talk about it a little bit more, but they want to form a commission of residents to kind of figure out ways to solve some of the issues that we have with affordable housing. You've seen the housing board through HUD have to come in and tear down some of our older housing, public housing structures, and really nothing is going up to replace it yet. And the city is city and the housing board are working with developers to try to get more housing up before some of the older stuff comes down. But there's always been a backlog, so that's something they're going to have to work through.
Some good stuff as always, Dale. And if someone wants to pick up that new issue of Lagniappe when it hits the streets here tomorrow, or if they want to subscribe online, how do they get that done?
Okay, well, just if you want to subscribe online, just go online and follow the prompts. It's 21 cents a day.
Mm-hmm.
You can have an online subscription and a paper subscription for $2 a week, and so that's $1.50 for online, 50 cents for the paper. That's a pretty good deal. And then you can get it free if you want to. If you're out and about and enjoying your day, you can get it for free at a bunch of different locations in Mobile and in Baldwin County, because we have a Baldwin edition now.
That's right. You do have the Baldwin edition, and both editions very good. Where can they follow you on social media?
Oh, I'm at Dale of Loxley, and then the paper's at Lagniappe Mobile.
Good stuff. Thanks, Dale, for joining me today.
Thank you.
That's Dale Leash, writer for Lagniappe, always coming through with the good information, especially when it comes to Mobile City Council and the future of Hank Aaron Stadium. Coming back, we'll wrap up Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Norwig, sitting in for Sean Sullivan.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile here on FM Talk 106.5. I'm Dalton Orwig, sitting in for Sean Sullivan today as we wrap up the Giving Tuesday edition of Midday Mobile. I want to thank the guests we've had on so far. Some great conversations with Todd Stacey, Jim Nagy, Jeff Moats, Dale Leash, getting all the good news, what's going on in our area and around the state. And a pretty cool event coming up Thursday night, Mobile Baykeepers annual Bay Bash. And on to talk with me today is the events and membership manager for Mobile Baykeeper, Elsa Jean McVeigh. Elsa, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So this year, the Bay Bash titled the Celebrating the Bounty of Mobile Bay, and it looks like you guys got some really cool stuff planned for Thursday night. First off, before we get into some of the details, I should ask, with it coming up on Thursday night, tickets, are they still available? What are we talking about cost-wise, and how can people get them?
Yes, tickets are still available. It's $125 for a couple or $75 for a single. You can go online to mobilebaykeeper.org and purchase tickets, and you'll be able to purchase them at the door. You know, of course, we recommend that you go ahead and get them.
For sure. And for those not familiar, tell everyone listening what Mobile Baykeeper's mission is. What all do you guys do for the community?
Okay, so Mobile Baykeeper is an environmental organization, and we advocate for our Mobile Bay watershed. You know, all of our work is to ensure clean water, clean air, and healthy communities now and for generations to come, so that we'll all be able to swim, play, and fish in the bay and the surrounding waterways safely.
So important for our community that we have a clean bay, and you guys are always on top of it. And I recommend, if you're interested in this too, going to the site Mobile Baykeeper and signing up for the newsletter. You get all the updates for what's going on in our area and how Baykeeper's out there helping keep it clean. So Thursday night, Bay Bash, you got some great food and entertainment lined up. You certainly get your money's worth. What's some of the stuff? What will we get to eat, and what are we going to get to see if we come out on Thursday?
Okay, you will definitely get your money's worth. We are really celebrating the bounty of the bay in more ways than one. So the Red Clay Strays, who are from this area, are going to be playing. We'll also have a special performance by the Eastern Shore Repertory Theater, and that is a theater school in Daphne, and they're going to be doing some excerpts from their recent Lion King production. And they are wonderful. We will have lots of our favorite local restaurants represented. Dumb Waiter, Dewdrop Inn, Creative Catering, Felix's, Carrabba's, Mobile Oyster Company, Roosters, Wentzel's. And this year we've added, we're going to have dessert and coffee with Cammie's Old Dutch, and Pullman's will have a cake there, and Chaleur will be serving coffee and some other goodies.
Oh, you just named all of my favorite stuff, Elsa Jean. That is awesome. So really cool. You're going to get some good food, good drinks, and good entertainment while you're out there. And then also, you got a silent auction going on, and I was looking at some of the stuff that you'll have up for auction. Some pretty cool things up for grabs.
Yes, that, you know, when we talk about celebrating the bounty of the bay, we're not referring just to food. We're referring to all of the wonderful talent and goods and services that are available to us right here in Mobile and our surrounding area. So we'll have lots of local artwork, some getaway packages to the Grand Hotel, to Orange Beach. We've got a cottage in Maine that's going to be up for grabs. Lots of local dining gift certificates. You know, items from local boutiques. And we'll have some sports memorabilia as well.
Well, you've piqued my interest, Elsa Jean. And once again, to get tickets to the event, how do people go about doing that?
Okay, for tickets, go to mobilebaykeeper.org. And you can purchase them online. It's $125 for a couple, $75 for a single, and that does include all of your food, wine, and beer. We'll have a cash bar for liquor. And come and get an early start, or get a start on your Christmas shopping at our auction, and just have a great time with the Red Clay Strays and everything we've got planned.
Well said. Thank you, Elsa Jean McVeigh, for joining me on Midday Mobile, and hope you have a great event on Thursday night.
great. Thanks so much for having us.
And on this Giving Tuesday, Mobile Baykeeper, if you're looking for somewhere to give some donations, that's a great site. Just head over to Mobile Baykeeper online. And that does it for Midday Mobile today. Coming up next, Paul Feinbaum at 2. And remember, tomorrow, Midday Mobile live at noon from the Fantail of the USS Alabama. And on Friday, live from noon to 2 at your CBD store of West Mobile. Y'all have a great one.